The time is now 7 minutes to nine. Imagine, if you can, a politician's speech without any of the usual jargon and political clichés. Tough, eh? No hard-working families, no difficult choices, no I'll take no lessons from the gentleman opposite, etc., etc., etc. At least through this thing, and it would, well, it would strip out all the jargon and the clichés and stuff. Hamish Thompson is the managing director of the firm, and he's with me. And so is Rob Hutton, who's the UK political correspondent for Bloomberg News. He's the author of Would They Lie to You? Well, we know who that is referring to. Now, Hamish, how does it work? A politician writes a speech full of the usual nonsense. What happens?
You just cut and paste the speech into a box on the site and you press a button and it will come back with all of the clichés struck through. So there's a database of all sorts of terms. We've written out to political correspondents. We've asked them to submit their views on which the worst bits of terminology are, and it will automatically hack them out.
So it'll identify, right. So you've now got a database full of politicians' clichés.
Yes. Well, we've made a start. We've been doing it since Tuesday, so we've got a lot of material to work through.
How many have you got so far?
We've got about 500 different phrases in there at the moment. But I think, you know, it's a rich vein, John. I mean, there's lots to go.
Well, I'm being constantly replenished. I'm not sure whether you can actually create a new cliché. Well, you can't by definition, can you? It's got to be old.
I don't think it takes long, actually. I mean, I think, you know, we live in the world of Twitter where, you know, people are just on a politician immediately. As soon as he or she says anything, I mean, they're just back at them with a parody of it within seconds.
And in fact, thinking about it, hardworking families, that's relatively new, isn't it?
It is, and it was escalated at the last conference. Everyday hardworking families.
That's right. Enhanced.
I think we got that at the Labour conference, but it sort of popped up everywhere. You do get these phrases that particular politicians are fond of. There is one senior politician I won't name whose speechwriters had a list of words on the whiteboard in his office that he was banned from saying. As an old-fashioned member of my party, as a father of young children. And they they're verbal props. We all have these verbal props that we fall back on.
Well, give us a few, and then I'm going to come back to you, because I know you're about to defend, your job here is, what a tough one it is to defend politicians, so I'm going to come back to you. But let's get some more from you, Hamish. What are your, I trotted out a few there.
Okay, as I travelled around the country.
Yes, that's it. That's always in every party conference speech, isn't it? Without exception.
I met a woman in my constituency. Yep. Now, the thing about these is that the Twitter audience, for example, is like a pantomime audience. As soon as somebody says, I met a woman in my constituency, they immediately say,
no, you didn't.
up and down the country. The other sort of set of phrases I hate are things like, to you I say, to him I say, to her I say, which is so self-aggrandizing. You know, I just think, you know, it's a sophisticated electorate now. We are, you know, taking things apart by the second.
And they sort of assume that they're some kind of Shakespearean character declaiming.
Exactly. And I think there's a thing here about politicians not getting enough real-world experience. They've digested all of those big political tombs. You know, they know all about the history of politics. What they don't have is enough dirt under their fingernails. And I think, you know, what we're crying out for, and I think this is where Farage has found his opportunity, is in creating a lexicon which is very much about what you hear down the pub.
Mind you, he's got to become a cliche, isn't he? And that whole pub thing has been... Rob, go on.
Right.
Defend them.
Here is the hard reality of British politics over the next 5 years. Your taxes are going up and your public services are going to get cut. That's the maths.
Right.
That's just what it is.
Yep.
I can say that, you can say that, but who wants to stand up in front of the country and say, I'll tell you what, things are going to get worse and it's going to cost you more? That's a terrible, terrible message. It's completely clear, but no one wants to hear it. So what is a political speech for? A political speech is, it's like polystyrene packaging around, you've got some goodie, some little
irritating
announcement.
Stuff you strip away.
Yes, absolutely. All that stuff that sort of litters your floor when something arrives. Yeah. And in the middle of the box is this tiny little announcement. And now, of course, there's this sort of speech inflation. So Ed Miliband's speech was supposed to go over an hour. David Cameron's speech went close to an hour. Nick Clegg's speech, I think, went more than
and
an hour.
And still, he did that. In the case of, well,
he forgot. It's because it was too long. All three of those speeches could have been cut by 15 or 20 minutes without losing a word. I mean, let's take the Gettysburg Address, probably the greatest political speech ever made. Less than 300 words long. took less than 5 minutes to deliver, doesn't just pay tribute to the dead, it completely reframes the Civil War as not a battle about the secession of the United States, but about a mankind's heroic struggle.
And we're talking about it still today.
But people hated it at the time.
Did
they? The chap who spoke for an hour or more before him got a much better review. The London Times said the Gettysburg Address rendered the whole event ludicrous.
How interesting.
So there is. I have every sympathy with politicians who don't want to say things. This is what the book's about: uncommunication. It's about how you get from having something you don't want to say to having something you haven't quite said.
But have they ever tried being entirely honest with us and saying, look, I mean, frankly, we haven't got a clue what to do?
Do you know, I mean, I think you see touches of that. I agree, it is a problem. But I think what we've got, if you think about the X Factor, OK, the X Factor journey is from sort of an authentic person turning up for those, you know, auditions to the kind of the jaded old cabaret star that you get at the end, you know, who's trotting out the same old lines. If you watch the X Factor in reverse, you know, you get back to the point where it's all about authenticity of language.
Right.
And I think that's what people are craving. So you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, there is an issue about honesty, but I actually think that is the opportunity. I think there is an opportunity to be honest and candid. Everybody knows that, you know, there are problems. And I think the first politician that is actually prepared to address that with sincerity is the one, you know, that really has the great opportunity.
Right, well, they're all listening, obviously. So watch this space. We'll have truth before long, or not, as the case may be, the unvarnished truth, that is. Thanks both, Hamish Thompson, Rob Hutton.
Our editors, Purvi Patney and Tom Coles. Good morning.